Okay, fine. So before we get to the source sheet that I sent out, a few Hara that I saw today. Well, yeah, I have extra. I have all of them. I haven't given them out yet. But first, just a few Ha'ara that I'd seen today, just to finish up the Tzad issue before we move into the next one. So we'd seen, if you just remember, that the Mishnah, the problem with fishing on Yom Tov, so we'd seen Rashi, who said it's a problem of Efshar, Yefshar, Mivid Yom. We'd seen the Ramban. Well, we never got to the sources that we were supposed to do last week. Okay, it's the same one. Yeah.
I have that.
Yeah. Okay. But, so what I'm about to say you don't have, but that's because I printed it out for myself just today. But we'd seen the position of Tosfos. The Tosfos we're going to see today, rather. We'd seen the position of the Ran, Rajba, Ramban, that said it was a limitation on Ochel Nefesh. A few more possibilities that I don't want to dwell on, but just to mention them. So one is Tosfos and Daf Gimel. Tosfos and Daf Gimel has this bizarre position. Well, no, he raises a bizarre position that he then rejects and calls bizarre. Right? He doesn't like it, but he raises it, which is that the reason you can't fish on Yom Tov is because you might accidentally catch not kosher fish. If you catch non-kosher fish, well, then it's not a chol nefesh. And he says, I don't understand what that is, because worst comes to worst, it'd be melacha chein shvicha legufa, because you were trying to catch kosher fish, so it worse be the rabbanan. So he doesn't understand that. That's just to mention that that appears there.
Does ochel nefesh include feeding your behemoth?
What?
Does ochel nefesh include feeding your behemoth?
Well, that we're going to come back to. That's going to be the next shir after this. Okay, we're going to come back to, I mean, we mentioned that on Daf Chaf Aleph, but we're going to get back to whether that is what this sugya is predicated on. But that's going to be after Okir Dav Megillah. Hold that thought for at least a week, probably two. Second point, Beis Yosef suggests that the concern is that you might fish extra, and that'll be Uvdin Dechol. Also a bit interesting. We've seen these mentioned, the Rishonim, like Meiri mentioned a few different positions, but that appears in the Beis Yosef. The position that I found strange is quoted here on the Daf Al Daf. I couldn't find it inside today. I didn't have the time to keep searching because the reference is off, or at least the Kilas Yaakov changes numbers, so I didn't have a chance to find the original, but he quotes it over here. This is very strange. So he suggests that the reason that it's forbidden to fish on Yom Tov is because Ochel Nefesh only permits, I'll read it to you, HaTorah Hetira B'Yom Tov Rak Laso Yesh Meyesh. You're only allowed to create from that which already exists. Avolahotzi Yesh Me'ayin Lo Hetira HaTorah. But Ochel Nefesh doesn't include creation ex nihilo. And therefore he says, L'chein L'holid Or L'das HaRamim Neshem HaTorah. Therefore he claims, according to the Rambam, making a flame isn't molid like we saw according to Rov Rishonim. He claims the Rambam thinks that it is d'oraisa because you're creating something ex nihilo. What in God's name does that have to do with tzad? Tzad is not ex nihilo. It's just not. It's yesh meyesh. So he says shechaya shenitzoda v'nichnasal rishuto b'yom tov chashiv ki yetziras davar yesh meayin. Hunting, which brings something into your rishus, is as if it's ex nihilo. I don't understand either argument, I'll be honest. Neither that.
Yisrael Shapatsky explained that. He said that the difference is, it's also why it's a melacha ru'ah, because the regular melacha.
Well, I assume he's building on the eglaytal. He says he's building on the eglaytal, yeah.
Well, because it's changing the context of the
object. Right, changing the context,
yeah,
right.
So that's, he says that's
is a type of ex nihilo. I assume that's what he's saying, but it's. Yeah. But that's a bit of a fascinating position. I don't know what to do with it. I couldn't find it inside, so that's what I have. I'm going to try to find it. But in the meantime, what? Kilas Yaakov. The reference is Kilas Yaakov Simin Yud Zayin. I looked at it. That's where it should be, but at least I didn't see it. But to be fair, I was involved in a million things today, so I didn't have time to search all the, the Kilas Yaakov gets a bit confusing if it's the wrong number. Okay, fine. So now, I'm hoping this recorder lasts till the end. If not, I bought a backup recorter. But it's finally, the battery is dying. It's lasted since August. This is like my competition. But now, however many shirim later. Okay. So Tosfos, though, had raised a totally different position. Tosfos said the problem with fishing on Yom Tov is that it is Oker Davar Migidulo, which is Kotzer, right? Which is the malacha of cutting. Cutting live produce, let's say, from a plant. And one of the things that are included, according to Tosfos, is taking a fish out of water. Okay. So if you look at the sheets that we have, we did 1 and 2 last week. Right? This topic really starts at 3. So we have to ask a few questions to figure out what Tosfos is saying. So the first assumption that Tosfos has is that Oker Davar Megidulo, this is the, right, it says Oker Davar Megidulo at the top, and we're starting at number 3, right? 1 and 2 is just Aros from that we mentioned last week. Tosfos assumes that Kotzer applies to animals. It applies to animals, which is not at all obvious, considering Kotzer classically refers to cutting fruit off trees, cutting vegetables out of the ground. Where would you get this notion that it includes animals as well? So this turns out to be a quite an extensive machlokas rishonim, as we will see. But in order to do this, we need to set up the nature of the malach of kotzer, which will help us understand the this machlokas rishonim, and really machlokas possibly bavli and yerushalmi. So if you look at number 4, the first machlokas you need to understand is as follows. The Gemara says, "Damar b'chia barashi amar Shmuel te'enim shetzamku be'ivehen mitamos tumas ochlin v'atolish me'en b'shabas chayiv chatos." So Barvashi quotes Shmuel, who says that if you have dates that have figs, rather, that have dried up, so they are still mitame tumas ochlin, because they're still considered food, and even though they are dried up, right, they've started to become pruny, raisiny, whatever, still while they're attached to the tree, if you cut them off, it's called tolish, because you are still detaching it from the tree. So Gemara says, "Hey Chidami, what's the case? Idiyavshan hein viuktzeyan. How much of these dates dried out? If the fruit became dry and the stem became dry, so pshita elolav elolav below uktzeyan." So if they dried out, 1 second. What did I miss in the ellipsis here? I feel like I cut out too much in the ellipsis, which would be bad. Okay, I'm gonna have to open up the Gemara, look at it inside. The dangers of starships. Okay. Okay, let's see. Gemara, Hulen, Kuf Chazayan, Amud, Beis. Hulen, Kuf Chazayan, Amud, Beis. And this is what smartphones were created for. It's when you need.
I have Safari on.
What? Let's say opening up Safari. Yeah. Yes. No, it doesn't. On Chulin, it's not even going to help you with the English, because they haven't put it up yet, because they haven't gotten that far. No. They haven't gotten that far. Right? The Koran hasn't finished their translation, because it's going, you know, Dafyomi. They're only either at Dafyomi or a little bit of it ahead. But they're not quite that far yet. Okay, so let me just find the line. Where are we going? Okay, so te'enim shetzamku be'ivein betamos tumos ochlin v'tolish me'en b'shavos chayv chatas. So the Gemara then says, "Leimim misayle." Let's support this. The yirako shetzamku be'ivein. If you have vegetables that dried up, this you don't have, but you can look it up on, if you have smartphones. Kigon akruv v'tlat in metamin tumos ochlin. If you have vegetables that dried up, like gourds and the like, and cabbage, they don't become tame. Katzitzan v'yavshan mitame tumas ochlin. If he cuts them off and they dry them out, so then it does become tame tumas ochlin. The Gemara says, is that true? Katzitzan v'yavshan zalkadai dachetz balmu. If you have a vegetable, it's totally dried out, it's cut off, it's just a piece of wood at that point. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, balmenas liyavshan. It's when you cut them off, They're still moist, but you want to dry them out, but in the meantime, they're still moist, fine. So the Gemara says, Taima dekruv udlasu, kevan deyavshan la v'nei achila ninu. This is unique to certain types of vegetables like gourds, that when they dry out, they're no longer edible. But that implies a shar peiros metame, their other fruits, even when they're dried out, are still considered food, and therefore they are going to be subject to tumas ochlen. So the Gemara says, hey chidami, what's the case? Idi yavshan hein viukseyen, right? Pshita, right? So what's the case, right? If the, right, so now we're going back to the dlat, that's what we missed there, right? If you're going back to the dlat, right, if the gourd dried out completely, it and its, you know, and the stem, so then obviously at that point it's not tamei. Lav below say, and it must be that it's teaching you that if it dried out even without its stem, right, the stem is still somewhat moist, at that point it's not food. And that meaning for delat lo. So the Gemara says no lolam hein viuktein vikatsan almanas liyapshan itzrichalay. So then the Gemara continues, and this is the part that we really need. The Gemara says tashma. This that you have on the you should have on the sheets. Yeah, ilan shenifshach uvo peros hare hein kitlushin yavshu hare hein kimichubarin. So right delat we'd said that if it fully dries out, it's no longer food. But what if you have a tree? And the tree has started to shenifshach, right? So if you look at Rashi, right? I give you Rashi here, right? Rashi, I'll give you the full thing, right? Shenifshach is nitlash mimenu anaf vos anaf yesh peros. The branch has detached, and on that branch there were fruit. So they are kitlushin. At that point, they are considered talush already, right? They're not going to be chayav because they're just on the branch. The branch isn't attached anymore. Yavshu, but if they were still attached to the tree, but they didn't split off, meaning there's not a branch which broke off. They're on the tree, but they just dried out. Harein mikimichubarin. So they're still considered attached to the tree, and therefore you'd be chayav on Shabbos if you detach them. So the Gemara says, "My love, matlushin lechol divrein, afmechu barn lechol divrein." Doesn't this teach you?
They're still attached, though, to the tree, though, aren't they? I mean, they're not in your possession, not in your hand.
Right.
Why would they be? Aren't they like mechuba lekarka?
Well, so that, which is what one second. Well, this is what the Gemara is going to ask. Gemara says, "Doesn't this mean that there's tlushin and mechubarin for all, for all halachot? Meaning, they're tlushin for tuma." And for Shabbos, or they're mechubarin for Tumah and Shabbos? And the Gemara answers, no. Haki de'isa, v'haki de'isa. And the Gemara says, and this is what you have Rashi here, no. Tlushin, shenifshach, v'chol devreim evit tlushin, bein le'inyon chiyuv Tumah, bein le'inyon Shabbos, u'mechubarin diksani gabe yavshu, l'shabbos ka'amar, v'lo l'tumah. He said, if it's detached, so then it's detached for all purposes. Right, meaning once you've broken it off the tree, so then you're not chayav for Shabbos, and you're not, right, and it's mekabel tumah, it's subject to tumah, right, while it's attached to the tree, it's not, but once it's separated. But it's a one-directional thing. That's only true for tumah, but for Shabbos, it's not true, right, because for Shabbos, it's still usur, right, for Shabbos, for tumah, right? For Shabbos, if it's attached to the tree, but it's dried out, it's still going to be usur to detach it, because, as Alan said, it's attached to the tree.
What about if it's attached to a branch that's not attached to a tree?
So then it's no longer tillish, right? That the Gemara says that, right? The cold brand that you could pull off, right? Yeah. I mean, think about it, right? You have grapes, right? They still have their little stems, right? You can pull off the stems, you can eat them, right? That's already fine. Okay, so so the Gemara tells you in Chulin that if fruit are attached to a tree, even if they've dried out, they're still considered attached. That's point one. But then the Rishonim of Machlokas, okay, how dried out can they be for that to be true? Right? Meaning, is the Gemara's rule always true or not? So in order to answer that, you have to look at another Gemara in Erevin Daf Kuf. And the Gemara there says, Tanichada, echot ilan lach, echot ilan yavesh. V'tani idach, v'med var mamurim balach, av b'yavesh mutter. So the Gemara is going through a very long discussion in terms of climbing trees and benefiting from trees, and all types of things that are asur, gzeira, shema, you know, shema, gitlosh, and this, right, this is actually a very practical halacha, right? The halacha is based on this Gemara that if someone climbs a tree on Shabbos, b'mezid, they have to stay there all of Shabbos, right? That's the halacha, right? But the Gemara is going through what circumstances is this under. So one Braisa says it doesn't matter. All these prohibitions apply whether the tree is moist or is dried out. And the other Braisa says no. It's only if it's moist, but if it's dried out, so then it's going to be mutter. And the Gemara says, after the much discussion in the middle, el lo kasha, kan bimos hachama, kan bimos hakshamim. It depends whether it's summer or winter. Now, what does that mean? So, look at Rashi. Rashi says, yavesh she'en bo lichluach, belav michubarhu. If the tree is totally dried out, so then the fruit on it, let's say, are not considered mechubar. Bimos hachama, yavesh mutter, deleka afilu mishum maris ayin, shaynikar lechol shehu yavesh. So why? What's the difference between summer and winter? He said, during the summer, you can even...
The leaves are all...
Right? Everybody knows, everything is drying out. So there's not even a maris ayin problem if you were to pull it off. Because not only is it dried out and not mechubar, but everybody knows that it's dried out. V'hadiktani asur b'mos hakshamim she'ein nikar ben lach ven yavesh v'ikam shum maratz ayin. In the winter, it is... So Rashi's position is... Right, and Rashi... Right, Rashi's position is... that in order to violate... Right, so how does Rashi square the two Gemaras? So Rashi explains, and I may not have actually given you the full Rashi, but I gave you the summary at the end from Rav Gigi to cut it down, was that it depends how dry something is. The Gemara in Chulin that says that when a fruit has dried out, it's still considered mechubar. So Rashi says that's if the fruit is dried out, but the stem isn't, meaning there's some life left in the fruit. The Gemara in Erevin that seems to imply that pulling off the fruit would be mutter if it's dried is when the whole thing is dried out. The fruit, the stem, right? The whole thing is basically dead, and at that point, even though it's technically attached, it is mutter. The Rambam rejects that. The Rambam in number 8 says, Tainim sheyavshu b'ivehen, v'cheilin sheyavshu perosev, bo hatolish man b'shabos chayv, alfa b'shein gakur and linyan tuma. The Rambam says, in no uncertain terms, it's not true, that if a fruit is fully dried out. So, for the purposes of tumah, it's considered akur, and at that point, right, it's not considered attached to the tree, and all the implications that come from that. But for the purposes of Shabbos, you are liable, because it is mechubar.
Is it edible? He's saying it's not edible, or it is edible?
Probably at some level it's edible. I don't know how edible. Yeah, I mean,
dried out figs are still edible.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how dried out. Correct. Edible. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how they're eating.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on dry.
Is he saying it's? I mean,
so he'll say it's subject to Kabbalah's tumah because it's considered akur from the tree, and therefore it's not attached on mechubar. But for the purpose of Shabbos, it's still aser. So what is behind the machlokas Rashi and the Rambam? So again, the Rambam holds that as long as something's attached to a tree, you are always going to be chayev on Shabbos. Rashi says you're chayev if it's only partially dried out, but if it's totally dried out and totally dead, so then you're not liable. So, as Rav Gigi points out, the simple machloka seems to be, well, what is the nature of the malacha of kotzer? Is the malacha of kotzer detaching something physically from its root, or is it cutting something off from its source of nourishment? Mm-hmm. And if kotzer is about cutting something off from its source of nourishment, it needs to be somewhat alive, otherwise it's considered detached. If kotzer is about physically detaching something from its root, so then you would be liable even if it's dead. Right? So Rav Gigi summarizes here in 9. Shitas Rashi Vitos She'en Chiyuv Kotzer L'Kshiyesh Yeniko Shel Hapri. Rashi and Tosfos say you can only violate Kotzer if there's some life, some nutrients being drawn into the fruit. Therefore, if the fruit and the stems had dried out, you would be exempt.
Aser or pater? Completely pater.
No, pater means pater aval aser. Pater aval aser.
Right.
But remember, the Gemara in Irvin wasn't saying, can you pull it off?
Right.
The Gemara was saying, can you climb?
Right.
Meaning, which would be a gzera atu, this. And he's saying, well, since that's only the Rabbanan, so, right. But again, that's a sugya in and of itself I don't want to get into. But, you know, it's fascinating. I spent like 3 days this week working on it. But Rashi and Tosfos seem to say the Yavshub Lok Sen Shiyon Kemadaim and Ilan Chayavam Tlishas. And Lashita Zu Iker Kotzer Bakiri Makom Chiyuso Vini Kaso Dafka. Right? Rashi and Tosfos clearly hold that Kotzer is about cutting something off from its nourishment. But Shitas HaRambam Shavam Beres Lo Yon Kemena Ilan Yish Chiyuv Bit Tlishasam. But the Rambam who says that even if the fruit is totally dried up and dead, Kol Zman Shilan Atzma Mechubar LaAdam of Yonik Men, as long as the tree is alive and the tree is rooted in the ground, you're chayav. If the tree is dead, then everyone agrees that it's permitted, because the tree, once the tree is dead, it's detached from the ground. But as long as the tree is alive, and therefore halachically mechubar, it doesn't matter if the fruit has dried out, because the malacha of kotzer is simply detaching from the ground.
Which always means dead in a tree? Or Yavish means that certain trees die to a certain extent, but are...
Well, Yavish on the tree means dead. Yavish on the fruit means dead. Yavish on the branches...
Because could you have a thing where you have certain trees that look dead, but in reality they rejuvenate when those...
Well, so that's a different category of gezomachlif, and makes it complicated. So let's just assume dried out and dead.
Okay.
And he says, "Ulfiza yuvan psaka shulchan aruch shehiter lechel gabe asavim yveshim sharei heim kitlushim." And that's why the shulchan aruch paskins that you're allowed to walk on totally dead grass, because they are halachically kitalush, right? Even according to the Rambam, which is ikar kosher b'akir makom chiburo. But the Rambam's position is that kosher is really about detaching from. Detaching from the ground rather than cutting off nourishment. Okay, so now let's come back to our question, right? Before we look at the shitot inside, can you extend kotzer beyond, produce, beyond things that are attached to the ground? Well, if you think that kotzer is about detaching something
from its life source,
so that's more expendable.
If it's
about detaching something which is attached to the ground, right? Then, right? It's harder to start talking about that metaphorically, right? And expanding it to live animals, or in the case of Tosfos, fish. So, with that in mind, let's figure out. Okay, are you or are you not chayev? Is there such a thing as kotzer by balei chayim? So.
Fishing. Or killing the fish.
Ah, well.
Taking it out of the water.
Because you take it out and put it in, you can fish and.
Right,
if
so.
If you want to kill it, then you can take it out still and preserve it in a bucket.
Right, so we'll see, right? We will get back to that. That's going to be sort of the unclarity in the Rishalmi, and the Glital is a whole discussion of it as well.
But you can say kosher is taking it out of life source, putting it back in life source, is growing it.
Well, maybe, but it's not kosher. So maybe, except that kosher and zareah aren't necessarily inverses of each other, right? If kosher and zareah were inverses, that'd be true, but they actually aren't.
Okay.
Which is one of the things, like in the Gray Book, right? He spends like a whole page saying, people think that kosher and zareah are inverses of each other, and therefore they try to imply one to the other. They're not. Because sometimes kotzer is actually in pursuit of zariah, right? Like you're cutting to make things grow,
right?
That could be kotzer and zariah at the same time. So it's not totally clear they're opposite. So are you chayev for right? Can you extend it to bali chayim, to animals? So Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. So the Gemara says Amar Shmuel Hasholet Dag Min Hayam. If you take a fish out of water. Once it's dried out, the amount of a coin, so then you are liable. And Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin says, where does it have to dry out? Bein Sanpi Rav, it has to dry out between its scales. So Amar Rav Ashi, Lo Tema Yavish, Mamish,
the fins.
The fins. So Amar Ravashi, lo tema yavesh mamesh. Don't say that it has to actually dry out. Right, even if it's starting to dry out, starting to run, starting to right, it doesn't need to be totally dry, but it has to start to dry out. So Amar Mar Bar Hamaduriam Rishmuel Hoshet Yado Lemei Behema Vedildel Uber Shibimeya Chayev. If you stick your hand in and you basically cause an animal to miscarry, right? You detach the embryo from the womb. So you're liable. My time up. Why is this true? So Amar Rava Barhamduri Asberali Lavam Rav Sheshes Haiman Ditalish Kesusa Mehizme Vihiga Mechayev Mishum Oker Davar Migidulo Hachanami Mechayev Mishum Oker Davar Migidulo. Because when you detach certain plants, right, like bramble and the stuff like that, you're chayev for Oker Davar Migidulo. So here too, you're chayev for Oker Davar Migidulo. So the question that all we've shown him had to deal with is, okay, for what melacha are you chayiv when you pull the fish out of water? And why does the Gemara compare causing the animal to miscarry, detaching the embryo from the womb, to a case of tolesh? So there's two ways of reading this Gemara. One is to say, well, the fact that the Gemara compares plant life to animal life and calls it Oker Davar Migidulo tells you that under certain circumstances, detaching an animal from its life source is tolish. The other possibility is to say the Gemara isn't equating them, it's an analog, they're analogous. Right? Just like detaching vegetation from its life source is tolish, detaching a living animal or human from its life source is a parallel malacha, namely Nitilas Neshama, or Gozes, right? There are two potential malachas that are similar. So, to give an example, right? Not Tolish. If you dig in a field, right? So you will be chayav for Choresh. Often, if you do that same act in your house on a dirt floor, you're chayav Mishum Boneh. Because it's the same act, but in the context of a field, it, to make it simple, aids in agriculture, and therefore it's under choresh. In your house, it makes your house look nice, and therefore it is boneh. So it could be that when the Gemara equates the animal case to the plant case, it's not telling you that you can be chayiv tolesh by animals. It's telling you that there are certain analogous malachot that would make you liable by animals. The two that come to mind are either, as I said, nitilas neshama, right, shechita, right, killing. The other possibility is gozes, right, because what kotzer is to a tree, gozes is to a living being, right? You shear, right? You shear the leaves off a tree and you shear the hair off of an animal, the fur off an animal, or the embryo from an animal. So, which one is it? So if you look on the Ramban tells you in no uncertain terms that he says it is not tolesh. He says, "Ha damrina b'moshet yadol mei behema v'dildol uber shebimeyah d'chayv mishum oker davar migidulo. Kashali, da gozes v'tolesh kanaf mina ov k'shein chayin lo mechayven lutarte chada mishum oker davar migidulo." He said, it's not true in other cases where you detach, let's say, feathers, that you're chayev twice. Oker davar migidulo and gozes. Right? Or you cut your nails, you cut your mustache. Ein vendin oker davar migidulo l'chayev tarte. Alma ein mishum oker davar migidulo d'havet talat d'kotzer l'gidulei karka. Therefore, he rejects understanding that this is kotzer. And he says, kotzer is only bigidulei karka. It's only plant life. So what does it mean here when it says you're liable for detaching the embryo from the animal? You're chayev from nitilas neshama for killing. The Yerushalmi though says that fishing, where you separate something from its life source, you are chayev mishum kotzer. So the Rabban says that's shelo kishitas with Gemara Dilan. It's against the Bavli. So the Ramban says the Yerushalmi indeed takes the position that kotzer means separating something from its life source, because it has that more expansive definition, he can interpret it as applying to animals as well, but he contends that the Bavli rejects it. Oker Kotzer is only separating something from it, from the ground, and therefore only applies to Gedulei Karka, and therefore the Bavli holds that there is no Kotzer by animals. Now, what Yerushalmi is he talking about?
What's the Yisrael
Nitzil Neshama? Shchita, right? Nitzil Neshama, Shchita, it's done Malacha.
So it's a Shchita
thing. Well, whatever you call it, Nitzil Neshama, Shchita, but yeah, right? Now, what Yerushalmi is he talking about? So that's number 12. Rabbanan, the Kesar, and Amrin, Hadon, Tetzayed Kavra, V'choldavar Shatam Avdil, Mechiyu, so Chayed Mishum Kotzer, Acholev Arodet, Chalos Dvash, Chayed Mishum Kotzer. Yerushalmi has two cases, right? One is the one that Tosos likes, which is the fishing. The other one is removing beehives, right? If you detach a beehive, right, you take off a piece of a beehive, you are going to be chayev mishum kotzer, even though obviously the beehive itself is not, right, it's not a plant. It is a, you know.
Who's Rabbanan Kesar?
The rabbis of Caesarea.
Yeah, so who were they?
Whoever know? Was in Caesarea, I have no idea.
Wasn't
you can look up the in. I don't know. I'm sure in.
There
in
were some Tanoim who were from.
Right. Caesarea. You have the academic. Who has the. You and Howie here, the academic.
It's only on. I don't know if there's one on Beitza.
Oh. Okay.
You have to look up
and see what it is. And they also say that a professor Google might know.
Yeah, probably.
Get the
milking a cow is the same thing.
Yeah, cholev is also, right, and milking a cow. All these things, according to Yerushalmi, are kotzer. So we have, seems to be, right, as I said, a two-level machlokas. The first machlokas is kotzer about cutting something off from its life source or detaching something from the ground? Which leads to the question, can you expand kotzer beyond plant life to animal life? If it's about detaching something from the ground, the answer is no. If it's about cutting something off from its life source, potentially, yes. The Yerushalmi is very clear that it expands it to, and the way the Ramban understands it, right? According to Yerushalmi, kotzer is separating something from its life source, and therefore the Yerushalmi can expand it to animal life. The Bavli, he contends, rejects this and thinks that kotzer is separating something from the ground because presumably, and therefore it is limited to things which are attached to the ground, meaning plant life and not animal life. The only thing that he has to deal with, therefore, is when the Gemara talks about this, okay, davar migidulo, in the context of aborting the fetus, the animal fetus. So he says that is when it says Oker Davar Migidulo, that doesn't necessarily mean Tolesh, it means in that case Nitilas Neshama. You are separating it from its place of Gidulo, you are Chayev, but not for Kotzer, even though Oker Davar Migidulo sounds like Kotzer, it is in fact not. So that is the position of the Ramban. However, as we saw, what is Tosvos Paskin? Tosvos says no, that the Bavli is reconcilable with the Yerushalmi and therefore argues, and that was what we saw all the way at the beginning, that when the Gemara says that you cannot fish on Yom Tov, the reason is because it is kotzer, and kotzer is too early in the list of melachos to be mutter mishum ochel nefesh. You're finding who Rabbeinu de Kisaron are?
Yeah, but what's halacha based? Like, that's not a site. Perek Zayin Halacha Beis?
Shabbos. Of Shabbos.
Yeah.
Yerushalmi.
Yeah, of the Mishnah?
No. Yerushalmi is divided by halachas.
Okay.
Yerushalmi is divided by halachas.
Right.
Right? Okay. Each one is called a halacha.
Right. It's really a Mishnah.
Well, correct, but in the Yerushalmi it says in it, halacha.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they're called. Right? Halacha, Aleph, Bet. You know, why they do that way, I don't know, but presumably the printer did that. I don't know. Right? I don't know. Maybe not. I can't actually
sure,
speak to
so
that.
It shouldn't be
another
okay.
Dissertation. Yeah.
But I'm sure
so
there
are. What's this Hachole Barode Chalet Vashkaya Vishim Kotzer that you don't think of the honey or the milk as a living part of the animal.
Correct, right? Yeah. Well, the rodichol is dvash is... Well...
Now, when I first read it, I think Sayed Kavra, all right,
he's hunting something.
He captures bees, all right? So maybe they're saying that you capture bees, if you separate them from the hives, they're going to die. So, you know, it's inevitable. I don't know, I'm not a biologist.
Right, but wait, right.
But he's saying, therefore, the hunt, you know...
Right, I mean, if you hunt these bees, right, Sayed Kavra, right, you hunt them from the bees, right, or whatever, you hunt the bees from the hive, whatever it is, right, your hive coats there.
Right, but now he's saying it's ha-cholev ha-harodeh ha-lot vash.
Right, so then you might even have to expand it a little bit more, right, it's... in the case of the honeycomb, what it's saying is it won't, right? It can no longer, it's not really alive before, but
right,
it's growable, right? I mean, it doesn't grow like a plant grows. It grows because the bees produce it, right? Once it's detached, then it, right? They won't. Cholev is even harder, right? What, in what sense is cholev? It's not really chiyuso at all, but I guess it's no longer being produced, right? Once it's separate, so right, while it's in there, right, while it's in the cow, right, it stays fresh, it stays whatever, right?
See, even the milk is easier because milk, they're conceiving of it like I don't know, like the hair of an animal, gozes.
Like they're not doing gozes. Correct.
It's coming out.
And it's somewhere that's true, right? It'll stay fresh while it's there, right? It won't, right? It doesn't start spoiling until it comes out.
But in that sense, you know, in that sense,
no, it's clearly even a bigger expansion, right? It's an even more expansive expansion.
I'm saying it's less. The honey and the honeycomb.
No, meaning more expansion than actual hunting, right? Like hunting. Yeah. I'm saying it's more of an expansion, right? That even it's not just like literally taking something's life away or away from its life, like an animal away from its life source. It's From its
source,
where it's going to increase in size, even.
But the honey in the honeycomb is already separated from the bees that are producing it.
Correct.
It doesn't grow. That's
correct, but it's still in its, you know, you're going to have to take it even a little bit more expansively. Its natural state, right? Maybe not separate from chiyuso, from its organic state. Yeah, maybe something like that, right? You have to sharpen the definition of it.
You squeeze out grape. That's also
what
you squeeze out grape.
So that's good. The clearly shchita, right?
What was shchita is a farik or dash or something.
Yes, right. So cholev is coming. It's
right now. Cholev, right? Cholev might be dash, might be right. Cholev is there's a bunch of things that actually could be. There's a big discussion in the Iranian about it, but
right. That doesn't bother me. Because
but you're right. You're right. We have to. The Yerushalmi is taking a few levels of chidushim, right? It's not just assuming that this applies to. Not just the ground, it's taking a particular interpretation, right, where it's expanded even to, you know...
To something that's
it's
already...
It's somewhat inanimate, right? It's, right, you know, meaning inanimate in the way we would talk about it, but not really...
Yeah, I'm not even thinking... I mean, admit that it can apply to inanimate things too, but the honey is already separated from the source that it's coming out.
Right, but at some level, its natural home. I don't know.
Yeah,
the state is the right. I mean, clearly, it's more of an expansion. And Rav Gigi points out here that even though this is Yerushalmi, it honestly it's difficult even in the Mishnah itself. If you look at the Mishnah in Uksin in 13, Kaver Devarim Reva Beehive. Rabbi Lozer Omer Harehi Kikarka, the Kosin Alea Prusbol. So Rabbi Lozer holds that it is like the ground, and you can write a Prusbol on it, being based on it, not on it, I mean based on it, right? In order to write a Prusbol, you need to own land. So if you own a beehive, you can write a Prusbol based on that land.
That would be the answer.
Right.
Is man-made. No.
What?
Don't you establish in some ways the way they do it, they have a place where they
allow them. They could do it on their own.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking.
Right, which one is this? I'm trying to remember. This is a human-made one?
In those days, they probably just whatever beehives.
They produced it. They kept bees.
But they helped them establish it, like they would.
For sure, they had advanced beekeeping, just like you know. I mean, there's as much as we have now.
So then, if it's man-made, then how could it be karka, right? In a sense,
just because you put it on land.
No, it's not. No, it's not like a. You know, I don't think it's entirely. Well, it wasn't totally artificial,
well,
right?
Now that you're saying it like this, you're really creating. You're really creating a pure. You know, a pure abstract category. That I mean, never mind the way I think of honey, but what they're saying is that a beehive is like a tree. You know,
essentially,
bees,
yeah.
The hive and the bees in it and the honey in it. It's all like a tree and it's growing from the ground. You know, even in the sense that you can write a prose bowl on it. It's
right.
You could use the same reasoning to say the ocean is like carbon. And then you have
yes, and right, there's a bit of a dune of what happens if you cut coral. Right, coral's a bit, right, is a discussion because amogim, right, are a bit, right, of a discussion because the sea and its relationship,
yeah.
Right? And to what extent are they, are domem or tzomeach, right? I saw today one of the Acharonim calls it, it's bein domem litzomeach. What that means, right? In modern science, obviously, tzomeach.
My pet rock never grew.
You don't have the right pet rocks. So Rabbi Lazar says that you can write a prose rule based on it, but eina mekabelas tumah, and doesn't accept tumah. Va'rodim en v'shavas chayev chatas. But that's not our problem here, right? Relaz are fine. The problem is we don't paskin that way. Chamam omrim ina kekarkav or the minujas pater. Right? You're right. Everything could be explained according to Relaz if you wanted to. The problem is the chachamim reject it. Meaning the Gemara was aware of a theoretical possibility, but the chachamim reject and they say it's not kekarka. So, but Rav Gigi points out something more important than that, which is. One, we pass like a chachamim, but that's not the real problem here. What's the real problem here? What does the Mishnah say explicitly? Right, this Mishnah Uksin. What is it, the question of being chayiv on Shabbos contingent on? If it's karka or not.
Right.
I mean, not whether it's... One problem is, yeah, we pass like a chachamim. That's not the real issue here. The issue that you have is that the Mishnah tells you that what's the only question you need to ask on Shabbos is something karka or not, right? And Rabbi Elazar, even Rabbi Elazar, who thinks you're chayav for detaching the kaveret on Shabbos, doesn't think that because he expands kotzer to include things that are not considered attached to the ground. It's just that he has a very expansive notion of what it means to be attached to the ground. But both the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer agree that kotzer is defined as detaching something from karka, and therefore say the only relevant question when figuring out whether you're chayev on Shabbos is whether or not it was karka. Right, so he said, "Muchach mi mishna zushi sor machol kusam binyan ro dechalz dvash hu b'sheila im zeh gedulei karka olo va'kol modim she'ein mechay mishum kotzer el b'gedulei karka." So kicking notes correctly, I think that we're going to be left with a very big problem in the Yerushalmi, which is it's not a problem to say there's machlokes bavli in Yerushalmi. Big deal. There's machlokes bavli Yerushalmi and a million sugars and shas. There cannot be, ostensibly, a machlokes Yerushalmi and Mishnah. Right? That doesn't work very well because, you know, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We don't have the Amoraim argue on the Tanaim. Now, maybe the answer is the Rabban and the Kesarin. Are they Tanaim? I have no idea. Right? I don't know who they are.
They are.
Maybe that's what it, maybe the answer is that the Rabban and the Kesarin are Tanaim from Zer, and this is some sort of brisa, right? That's not introduced by a Tanya. I don't know, right? I think we have to look this up, right? Yeah. But Rugigi is right. The simple understanding is if the Rabban and the Kesarin are some Amoraim in the Yerushalmi, so either you accept that the Amoraim just argued on the Tanaim, right? Which at least in the Bavli, they don't do that very often. And even the Yerushalmi, right, as far as I know, I'm no Bucky in Yerushalmi, they try not to do that. But maybe the Rabbanan de Kesarin or some sort, or Tanaim, or maybe there's some sort of mid-level, like Rav. I'm sure if someone listens who's academic, he's going to tell me that I'm being stupid. I plead ignorance. I have no idea. Really, I will try to ask one of my friends who's getting a doctorate in Talmud. If they can't answer, then, you know, well, then they shouldn't get their doctorate. No, this, right? You'd better know this, right? I'm joking. They can still get a doctorate, but they should still know.
Is the Mishnah identical in both the Rishalmi and
The Mishnah, yeah. Mishnah. I mean, look, I can't prove it to you that they have the same Mishnah Oksin because there's no Bavli or Yerushalmi on Oksin. So how am I supposed to know? But as Rugigi notes, the simple understanding here is that we have a problem in the Yerushalmi that not only is against the Bavli, which big deal, it's against the Bavli, it's against the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah, both according to Elazar and the Chachamim, the only relevant question on the Shabbos is whether it's Mechubar Lekarka. They just happen to argue on how expansive can you be in defining whether or not something is Mechubar Lekarka, but nobody in the Mishnah seems to assume that Kotzer can be something which is Mafsik Kiyusa without being Mechubar Lekarka.
Was that question on Tosfos also?
It's a problem with Tosfos. Well, Tosfos has a lot of problems, right? Tosfos, first of all, may go against the Bafli in favor of the Yerushalmi. B, the Yerushalmi seems to go against the Mishnah,
right.
Which is, admittedly, that's not Tosfos' problem, right? Meaning, Tosfos...
Oh, it is problem.
I mean, fine. But Harotza Sheikhanek Yitlan Bilan Gadol, right? Like, you know, he can say, it's not my problem, the Yerushalmi said it before me. I don't know how the Yerushalmi dealt with the Mishnah, but the simple understanding of the Mishnah is against the Yerushalmi.
Have you looked at the Kahati on that Mishnah, Nutzen?
I mean, this is the simple read of the Mishnah. I don't know. I mean, you can do research. I have not looked at the Kahati.
In a different way, the very Dvorin was remarried Haredi Kikarka, meaning just like Karka gives nourishment to wheat.
Ah, so this is, that was Rav Lucham Sin's. That was interesting. So. You're right. So Rulichlin's favorite Chakira in the entire world, right, was, this is what he would get very excited. We have a Chaf. We have a built-in Chakira. Does a Chaf HaDimyon or a Chaf HaShivyon, right? Is it the Chaf of equation or the Chaf of comparison, right? So Rav Gigi is assuming that the Mishnah means the Chaf HaShivyon. Ki Karka, it is Karka. You're saying, the Yerushalmi thought that the Kaf wasn't a Kaf HaShivyon, it wasn't equating the Kaveret, it was the Kaf HaShivyon, the Dimyon. It was comparative, meaning it was saying, just like Karka is the stores of nourishment, so that's very clever. That's clever, right?
Similarly, you could say that water...
Correct, you could say that. I like that. That's correct. So that would give us a much less complicated answer, like saying that Ben Degesar and our Tanaim or something. You could just say that the Yerushalmi... That's interesting, right? The Yerushalmi holds that the Chaf in the Mishnah is a Chaf Ha, right, Dimayon, and not a Chaf HaShivyon, meaning it's comparing, it's analogous rather than equivalent. That's good. Okay, they're good. They're good. So that's how we'll defend the Yerushalmi. I like it. I good. Okay. It still may be true that Brandei Gesarin, for all I know, are Tanaim. I don't know. I will have to try to find that out. I will make a note for myself to figure that out. A mental note. I will, you know, presumably ask one of my many chavrusas who are currently getting a PhD in Talmud or ancient Judaism. One of them had better know.
My recollection is the city of Kesari, Jewish population, was destroyed by the Greeks.
When? Because according to Josephus, that's where the war broke out between the Romans.
Okay, yeah, let's try. You know what? Let's just try it. I will throw it. I may not get anything out of this, but I'm going to try Rabbi Google.
He says it
let's see.
In Kesari,
Rabbi Google. Rabbanan.
And then the Romans find the Beis HaMikdash.
Rabbanan. But even if it turns out not this way, you're right, Sam. Really, now I'm hitting myself because I was in Rav Lucham Sin's chair long enough to know that the solution to all problems can hang on a chaf, right? That I should know. Rabbanan. Okay, here we go. So, Rabbanan de Kesarin are quoted in general by. It comes up on Rebbe Avo. V'avol hayam amora eretz Yisraeli ben hador ha-shlishi mitalmidav ha-chashuvim shel Rabbi Yochanan yashav b'kesarin. Rabbi Avo chihen b'tor rosh yeshiva b'kesaria. V'itzeg yata yishuv ha-yehudi ba'aret b'bnei shultonut ha-imperia ha-romit. So apparently it is, okay, Rabbi Avo is what... Wikipedia is claiming, but he's not actually claiming the Rabbanan de Kesarin. He's saying he is the first of the Rabbanai Kesaria.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they're
He was an Amori, no?
He's a third generation Amori. He's Talmud Rabbi Yochanan.
Rabbi Yochanan was the first generation.
Yeah, so right. You're talking about Haifa?
Destroyed the Jews in Caesarea. Isn't Caesarea a Roman city? Like
a Caesar? I have no idea. But this Jews is never... Oh, wait. Jews, no, I got it.
For a period.
I mean, Herod.
Oh, yeah, okay. So here... Okay, here... Okay, so... From the very hush of academic source of Wikipedia, he says that Rabbanan de Kesarin are Gam Chachmei Hador Haba Rabbi Yonah Rabbi Yosi Ayumi Talmidei Midav Ha'achronim Hityarchzu Elabaratza Bein Talmidav Nimigam Rabbi Yirmiyah Mechazer Shalvi Avo Nitgaru Kamach Chama Nikram B'Shem HaKibutzi Rabbanan de Kesarin. So it's apparently third and fourth generation of Amoraim, Rabbi Avo and his Talmidei. So the answer is no, they're Amoraim. So that, throw that out. So then our answer, we have to revert to Sam, right? That the answer hangs on a chaf, right? and we'll have to say that the Yerushalmi would claim that the Mishnah, when it says kekarka, it means the kaf ha dimyon. Ha dimyon, but not kaf ha shivyon, that it is like karka, but not actually karka, which might work for Shabbos. The problem with that svara is the prusbul, because prusbul presumably means karka mamish, but you could always just, right? I would leave that bikasha, right? Okay, maybe, or maybe the Mishnah doesn't hold that, I don't know. Maybe the Mishnah thinks that it could be on something which is kik karka, I don't know. Which would be a big chiddush in prusbul, I don't know. It's the best I've got, look, either you're right, or the Yerushalmi thinks it can argue, the third, fourth generation Amoraim, the Yerushalmi think they can argue on the Mishnah, which I don't know the Yerushalmi well enough to tell you that that's not a thing in the Yerushalmi, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Tana Upalig, Rabbi Yochanan, Tosva says in the Bavli, thought he was a Tana Upalig, but he wasn't. I don't know what that means, but fine. No, but I don't know who makes the rules.
Rabbi Yochanan is on a higher Madriga than Rav.
Okay, fine, but Tosfos still says again, I don't know what this means, but Tosfos says that Rabbi Yochanan argued on the Mishnah sometimes because he thought he was a Tana Upalig, but while Rav we allowed to do it, Rabbi Yochanan we don't because he was wrong, he wasn't a Tana. Okay, maybe Rabbi Avohu thought he was a Tana Upalig, I have no idea, right? I don't even know what that means anymore. I'm like, here I'm speculating based on nothing, which is not something I like doing. So I'm left with Akasha. I don't know what to do with it. Rav Gigi didn't know what to do with it either, right? I'm just quoting Rav Gigi and telling you he seems to be right that the simple read of the Mishnah would be against the Yerushalmi. How do you solve it? Maybe the Chaf problem with the Kasha on Prusbul. Maybe we're going to have to solve it through... I don't know. I'm going to leave that with Tzarach Iyun on many levels. We're going to stop here. But what we're going to do next week, as you see, the Yerushalmi brought up this question of Rode Chalos Dvash. We're going to have to analyze that sugya in the Bavli, which is a sugya we've seen several times at this point, which is on Shabbos Tzadihei, and move from there. But we've seen sort of the two fundamental questions so far that lead up to this question, which is Kotzer about separating something from the ground or from its source of nourishment, and the subsidiary question, which is, can it be expanded beyond things that are actually attached to the ground? The Yerushalmi assuming that it can, and taking even a third step, right? Not just killing something, for example, would be coats there, but even separating milk and honey and parts of a honeycomb, which seems to be even more expansive. And then we have the Tosfos who thinks that we paskin like that version of the Yerushalmi. The Ramban rejects it and assumes that is a machlokas, Bavli and Yerushalmi. We'll see why he thinks that. We haven't even gotten to the Gemara of why he thinks that yet, which is a Gemara here in number 17. What else is important to note from this week? I think that is it. That is where we stand for next week, and then we'll take up the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Bechoros on it, and hopefully finish this source sheet next week, which would bring us to the question of Ein Ma'achilin the week after, and that should be the last sugya before we come back to the mission that we reached last week of Metzudas Chayev Of on the bottom of Chot Dalet Amud Aleph. Okay.